Ah, but your friends will remember you. That's the point.
None of us were friends with Charlie Parker. That's the point.
Travis and Dustin, they have plenty of friends and plenty of purpose.
And I'm sure they'll make great school board presidents someday.
Oh, that's what this is all about? You think you're better than us?
Catch on quicker than Model UN.
I got a reply for you, Andrew. You think Carleton football's a joke? Come play with us.
Four words you will never hear from the NFL.
May old acquaintance be forgot on episode 42 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Aloha, everyone out there in podcast land. Welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 42. I am one of your many hosts, Chris Evangelista.
I'm Jeff Rollins.
And I'm Dave Costell.
And when our powers combine, we are Cut Print Film, and you can check out our reviews of movies and editorials at cutprintfilm.com.
That's right. We spend all our waking hours writing for you, the listener,
right,
and the reader.
Yeah. And you don't ever care. What's that about? You never never write or call anymore.
Yes. You told me you were going to get that tattoo on your neck of our name, but you never did.
So this is the last episode of season one.
I know, yes. Yeah. 42 hours, season one.
We finally solved the murder.
Our seasons are similar to how they used to do TV seasons when TV was brand new technology. Yeah. There was a new episode every week, and it ran for an entire year, and that was one season.
In front of a live studio audience, too.
It's the opposite of British TV, where two episodes every season, and they go on hiatus for 4 years.
Two seven-hour episodes.
You know what? Those Brits have it right, though.
It's true. You get a lot, and it's, you know, you're over and done.
All right, what are we doing today?
All right, well, let's talk. We're going to talk about... It's the end of the year, everyone, so we're going to be talking about...
It's the end of the year as we know it.
That's that golden voice I've come to know and love.
So we're going to be talking about the best films of the year, and also the not-so-best films of the year. But first...
I prefer Kodak... I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I like Fujifilm, but that's just me.
I like the film that forms over a pond in the summer myself.
I like that film that forms over warm milk when you heat it up in the microwave to make some delicious hot cocoa.
I believe it's called curd. Our long national nightmare of never being able to see The Interview has ended because The Interview finally did come out. The film that was protested and canceled eventually because of... Those wacky Koreans finally came out.
Now, there hasn't been much reported about The Interview in the news. So.
I know. I feel like it slipped through the cracks.
So what is this indie gem?
The Interview is a film that stars Seth Rogen and James Flacco as their two buds. They're kind of like the modern-day Abbott and Costello. They're two guys. They hang out, and they run a TV show, and they're going to interview Kim Jong-un in North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And the CIA says... We'd like you to kill him, which is probably the most unrealistic thing in this whole fucking movie, that the CIA would just suddenly pick these two guys to do it. And that's basically the film in a nutshell. They go to North Korea, hijinks ensue. And,
what's the film in an eggshell, though?
It's very fragile.
I'd like to see it in an off-white, too.
It's Sunny Side Up, I believe.
Oh, okay. Well, now that we're back on track.
So yeah,
it's
Dave
not
and I
bad.
Watched it.
Yeah. I laughed. I laughed a decent amount of the film. I was laughing.
Yeah, I would say I expected it to be terrible, honestly.
From the reviews that I was reading, I expected it to be awful.
And I'm not a big fan of the. I believe their guy's name is Evan Goldberg. I'm not a fan of the Seth Rogen Evan Goldberg films. Like, I did not. I'm one of the few people who did not like Superbad when it came out.
I didn't either.
I'm glad. So Jeff and I are the only two people on Earth, apparently, who don't like it. Because I remember when that fake film came out, everyone loved it. And they were acting like it was the funniest movie ever made. And I was like, what's happening?
It hasn't aged well either.
I'd imagine
not.
It,
you're like, what the...
I don't like that, Chris, you called it bad improv once.
Yeah.
I don't. That's what it feels like. It feels like bad improv where it's rapid fire conversation. That's supposed to make you laugh because of how wacky the things they're saying are.
Right.
But I have funnier conversations with my friends than these guys do, and it's less forced and it's more natural.
Yeah.
The problem with these films, and it also applies to the Judd Apatow films, is they don't believe in editing. They leave everything in. They leave every joke in, and as a result, it's like, all right, you need to cut this stuff down. But I will say, The Interview, it does have a lot of funny moments, but it's. It's really uneven. The movie is... Would you agree, Dave, that it's an uneven film?
Yeah. It starts out pretty strong, and then I'd say in the middle kind of dies down.
It doesn't seem like it knows why it wants
to. No, it's all over the place, too.
The first half hour is actually very... Like, the opening scene has James Franco interviewing Eminem, and Eminem casually comes out as being gay, and that's actually really funny.
Yeah,
that shows some self awareness, and
like, the way that it's done is.
I was
really
very surprised they got Eminem to do that. Yeah. By the way,
and that is funny, and then from there,
is that a spoiler?
It's like the first scene of the movie, so I feel like it shouldn't be a spoiler.
That Eminem's gay.
Also, I
heard it here first. Breaking.
I've seen a lot of movie websites post that clip, so I'm not going to say it's a spoiler.
There's the scene where after he announces he got the interview with Kim Jong-un, where him and Seth Rogen are standing in a room with a TV, and it's all in the news. It's like showing the newsreel of everyone talking about how James Franco's character, Dave Skylark, is like an asshole and a traitor to America, and it's just all this like news footage about them and North Korea, and it got me thinking, like, this very scene probably happened for real,
right?
With those two sitting in a room watching all the interview coverage, saying the same shit.
After the fact, though, that's interesting.
Yeah, James Franco starts yelling like "fuck these." I forget, it's something very funny, but
he says they hate us because they ain't us, and Seth Rogen thinks he's saying anus instead of ain't us.
Well, I hope that plays a lot better.
It plays a lot better. Well, I just recited it in the most tone-deaf way. So,
because this character, Dave Skylark, is ridiculous.
Like, I did not like James Franco in this. I liked him a lot. Goddamn. I liked Seth Rogen in this. The biggest surprise in the film is the actor's name is Randall Park, who plays Kim Jong-un. He's actually very good. Like, he's in another... Like, he actually... I think what the reason it works so well is he plays the character... I'm not going to say seriously because it's funny, but he plays it straight.
Okay.
And he plays it really well. And he actually makes Kim Jong-un really likable. Like, he's the most likable character in the film, which is kind of ironic because, you know, it's all this controversy.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, it makes the movie kind of makes America look worse than it makes North Korea look.
The takeaway from the movie is that the Americans are just fucking morons, and
That's funny. That's a funny idea, though.
Right. But, like, yeah, the problem is it's a really stupid movie. Wow. Like, as I was watching it, I kept thinking, like, imagine if someone, like, and this is, like, the name that always comes to top of my head when I think about smart, modern comedy. Imagine if, like...
Mike Myers,
yes.
The love guru.
Imagine if Edgar Wright had directed this. Edgar Wright is someone who knows how to do really intelligent, but also silly comedy. Like, he can do that really well. And, like, imagine if he had done, especially just from, like, an editing standpoint, just, like, the way he would shoot it. It would actually be a really great movie.
Yeah, but they wouldn't send Simon Pegg to assassinate Kim Jong-un. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, like, the whole setup of them going is, like, the worst setup. Like, Lizzie Kaplan, who I generally like, she plays a CIA agent, and she's just like...
She's not very good in
this.
She's
not good in this. I normally like her. She was great on that show Party Down, but in this...
That's the sole thing I've ever liked her in.
She shows up, and she's just like, we want you to kill Kim Jong-un, and she knows how stupid these guys are, and they just go along with it. And it's like, that would probably not... ever happen.
Yeah.
And it's a weird movie because it's also really graphically violent, which I was not expecting. Like, there's a lot of really graphic violence.
Hard R.
Yeah. Like, people get their heads, like, blown off, and it's, like, all shown. And it's not done in a funny way either. It's, like, in an almost disturbing sort of way.
Yeah.
Which can be, it can work, but I don't think it worked for this film. It just goes to that. The tone, it doesn't work. It doesn't know what kind of movie it wants to be.
Exactly. It's just all over the place.
Like, you can tell it wants to be a smart comedy, but every time it gets close to being smart, they do like 10 dick jokes in a row, or there's like 10 jokes where they make fun of the fact that Asian people have the last name Dong. It's like, all right, enough. Boy. Enough.
It's almost the movie that it could be is Inglourious Basterds if it tried hard.
Yeah, it could almost be that movie.
That's essentially the same movie, like the same plot. It's sending these guys in
to kill a dictator. Yeah.
And Inglourious Basterds is phenomenal. And this.
Who directed this?
I think
Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg directed it together.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
And you can tell.
There you
it's
go.
Not.
It's pretty much point.
Generally, the more directors you have on a project, the better the film.
Yeah. Anytime there's a lot of directors or like a film has like seven writers, you know it's going to be good.
Alan Smithy in the
Franco also helped.
Oh, good. Good for him.
He did all the handy cam shots.
So, yeah, when all is said and done, the interview is definitely...
When all is Seth and Rogen.
It was not... It's not worth all of this.
It's an average film.
All of this hubbub. I mean, it's. I would never say a film should be censored. It's important that the film came out.
Yeah, but I agree.
At this point, I would like us all to move on and just forget it came out.
I'm perfectly fine with that, too.
All right, so this is the last time we'll ever talk about the interview.
But I did like it. And for all the shit it got, because there were a lot of critics who seemed like they wanted to go with the headline.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Shitty movie, gets lots of press.
There's a lot of like false outrage that's annoying me. Like I've seen a lot of think pieces that are like saying, it's not funny to talk about assassination. Like, sure, shut up.
Sure, it's funny to talk about anything.
It's a movie. Yeah, anything is open game if you do it right. So just shut up. And I'm not saying this movie does it right, but I'm just saying.
No, absolutely not.
But just enough. Enough with that silly goose bullshit. So let's move on.
Yes.
To some more silly goose bullshit. Yeah.
Yes, it's 20... What year is this? 2014.
It's the year 3939.
It's the year of the dog, I believe. Oh, and 2014 is...
It's good for the goose. It's good for the gander.
It's 2014, the year of the gander.
What's happening? The year of the gander.
And the year is drawing to a close, which means everybody's putting out their best of, worst of lists. We did that on cutprintfilm.com.
Right.
You can read our favorite films of the year and our least favorite films of the year, but...
Soon you'll be able to read our most anticipated of 2015.
That's right.
We never sleep.
No, we don't. That's coming out this week, actually. But today we are going to be talking about three films that we loved.
Three films each that we loved.
Three films each that we loved this year. One film that didn't make our list, but it was just as good.
It was on the cusp.
A movie you might have missed, right?
Yeah, definitely a movie you might have missed.
Sort of like it fell under the radar.
And a movie we found to be absolute garbage.
Right. Our each worst film of the year.
Mm-hmm. So here, let me just play a little promo here.
Oh, good.
Welcome, one and all, to the Cut Print Film End of the Year Awards.
Oh, Chris, so, you look great in that tux.
I put it on just for this segment.
Who are you wearing, Chris? Whose skin are you wearing?
This is an Ed Gein.
All right, so who wants to go first with their number three film of the year? And these really aren't in any chronological order or any type of importance order. It's just three films we loved.
I'll go.
Okay, Chris.
So I wanted to talk about... we've seen so many movies this year. It's sometimes I feel like I've forgotten about movies. Just because I'm not going to speak for you guys, but for myself, I've seen so many movies this year. They all blur together at times.
A lot of them do.
Yeah. But one movie I saw not earlier in the year, but
I've only seen eight.
Dave, you're fired. You shouldn't be running a film website. That's all.
I just make up all.
You've
my
written
reviews.
70 reviews. I don't know how you've only seen eight.
It's a film called Whiplash.
Which I think we did that a lot during the Whiplash episode.
Oh, no, that sound effect is strictly for Costel's cakes.
Okay.
Sweet.
So Whiplash.
Delish.
Whiplash, what made it so remarkable to me is because in concept, it's not an interesting concept. It's basically just about a guy who wants to be a jazz drummer. And
oh, boy, I'm already hooked.
Yeah, you just and like I like jazz.
He's a little
but
drummer boy.
Yeah. I like jazz, but just that description is just like, oh, that doesn't sound interesting at all. But it's so
because you're a jazzy boy, right?
Yeah, I'm a big jazz boy. I don't know about you, but it's for one thing, it's really well directed. It's directed by Damien. How do you say his last name? Chazelle. You want to say?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, Damien Chazelle. I've never seen any of his films before, but
that's because he doesn't have any.
Well, he directed a film called
Whiplash. It was a short.
It's called Whiplash.
No, really.
He has something called Something on a Park Bench or something. Oh, like that. But from like the first few shots of this film, like this movie has like the type of energy that early Martin Scorsese films have, where it just crackles. You could say, and
well, it's that awesome panning up the hallway of him while he's playing the drums.
Right. Yeah. It opens with the character's name is Andrew.
Andrew Niemann.
Yeah, Andrew Niemann, played by Miles Teller, who is very good in this. The acting in this is fucking phenomenal. I'll get to that in a minute. But just the directing is just, it's really tight and energetic. And the last like 20 minutes of this film are the most intense anything I've
seen
all
year.
That's
what I keep hearing. The last 20 minutes and the ending is just...
The whole movie,
and,
man.
And all just... and all the ending is just... him drumming, but it's filmed in such an incredible way. I've never seen anything like it just from like a musical, just filming music.
Yeah, Chris and I saw that together, and we were both kind of like speechless. Like we couldn't even talk.
Well, that's because Chris did the popcorn trick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, every time.
And you were shocked.
But in love.
It's really hard to make. I don't know, but I always find it's hard to make a movie about music interesting because music is such a different sort of medium than
it's
film.
It's subjective. Right. So if you're.
Well, did you ever see That Thing You Do?
Oh,
I actually like that movie.
I do too. But it's hard because a lot of times actors really aren't musicians, and you can tell. Like they're up there and they'll be like playing a guitar, and you can tell they're just strumming it. And it's not. It's just.
Yeah. Well, Miles Teller actually plays the drums.
Right.
So
and he took lessons to get even better for this film. And so as great as Miles Teller is in this film, the standout of the film is, of course, J.K. Simmons as his teacher, mm-hmm. Fletcher. And J.K. Simmons, I've always liked J.K. Simmons. He's a great character actor, but he is phenomenal. Oh, my. He's terrifying in this film. And he has amazing biceps that he's always bulging out of his T-shirt. And he's scary, and it'd be really easy to play this character over the top because he yells a lot.
Yeah, a lot of Arlie Ermy.
Right. It'd be so easy to do that, but he plays it. It's a restrained performance somehow. So I don't know how he did it, but he did it.
He like exudes this discomfort that like whenever he's on screen, you just feel uncomfortable.
Even like the first scene before we've even found out his character is insane.
Yeah,
he walks in and you're just instantly tense, just the way he carries his body language, the way he carries himself. And it's such a good performance. I'm going to be very disappointed if he doesn't win Best Supporting Actor. I have a feeling he won't. I feel like people are just gonna like.
Yeah, I think Mark Ruffalo might win. But
I think
I wouldn't mind that. I mean, I haven't seen Whiplash yet, but I do love J.K. Simmons. I've liked J.K. Simmons since I saw him in Oz, and I thought this guy is fantastic.
And
he's so versatile.
He's
too.
Good in everything he does.
He plays. He's just able to carry different types of roles with ease. He was the father in Juno,
right?
And it's such a different character than his. Prisoner in right. Oz yeah, or he, this what's his name Fletch Lives
yeah it's Fletch One.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's able to play like likable and unlikable guys really well, and this film though I feel like this is like his defining performance, because after seeing this film he pops up from time to time in those fucking Farmers Insurance ads and like every time I see those ads I'm just uncomfortable now because I'm picturing him in Whiplash screaming in Miles Teller's face. And it's a really great
very
movie.
Good movie.
And
very
it has one of my favorite lines of the year is near the end of the film, J.K. Simmons' character says, like, there's no worse phrase in the English language than good job.
Oh, right.
And that's such a fucking great line.
That's in the trailer. And that line actually made me want to see the movie even more.
And it's
so mean.
It's a really good movie.
It was probably the most... I mean, there were a lot of exhausting movies this year, but it's like the most exhausting because it's so fast paced and rarely pauses to let you like collect yourself.
Yeah, it drains you.
Yeah. All right. So
Whiplash.
So next, who's next?
I'll go. My number three pick is a film we've talked about in depth already. It's Gone Girl, directed by David Fincher.
You want
me
to sing my song for it?
Hmm?
You want me to sing my song?
No, that's unnecessary.
Yeah, save it for later.
I'll be. Nobody needs that. Yeah, so Gone Girl is David Fincher's film that came out in October, I want to say, starring Ben Affleck and
3rd.
Rosamund Pike, who delivered my favorite performance from an actress this year. I haven't seen Still Alice, and I know Julianne Moore is getting unbelievable praise for that performance. But
she's good in that, but I agree that Rosamund Pike is like the best actress performance of the year.
And I also haven't seen Wild, and I know Reese Witherspoon's receiving.
I would still say Rosamund Pike is the best.
I loved this performance.
She's so good, and I feel like people are just not acknowledging it now. It's kind of weird.
It's such a nuanced performance here. She plays two different characters simultaneously,
right.
And she has the look above all of Amy Dunn.
Right.
But aside from this fantastic performance by Rosamund Pike, the film looks fantastic. It's got this gray and white sheen over the entire thing. It's clinically sterile, and the tone of it is fantastic as well. It's poppy. It's quick-paced dialogue. Everybody's getting their jabs in.
I think I would give Fincher Best Director.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far,
even though I
don't
really
get
like
crazy
it.
On us.
I don't know. I love the way this film looks.
It's an expertly made film.
Has he ever won?
No.
Yeah. No. So he should probably get it.
He's due eventually, but I don't know if I would.
I believe this. He was nominated for Panic Room, if I'm not mistaken.
No, you're thinking of Alien 3.
Oh, listen,
the work cut.
Let's not knock Alien 3.
I like it, but let's.
It's
let's
my
not.
Favorite third entry in a series. But yeah, Gone Girl, I loved it, and the music, the score by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross,
so is good,
fantastic, and just it just elicits feelings in you. And you that you'd
help me, my pants are on from the inside.
That elicited a different type of feeling from me.
Just my pants are on from the inside?
Boiling rage.
I've got no self-control.
Stop. Okay. Well, Gone Girl was a really good movie, everybody. Yeah. And, it's my number three pick.
The acting in all around is great. Not just Rosamund Pike, but Ben Affleck is very good at
this, fantastic. Everybody that was cast in this film exudes that character to perfection.
One that really surprised me is, because I haven't seen her in anything else, is Carrie Coon as
great.
Affleck's sister. She's another one I feel like people should be talking about her for best supporting actress. And no one's saying anything.
Not a
peep. She's so good in this.
Back to how Fincher directed this. Like, there's something about the early scenes of the movie that just feel like my wife is missing. Not my wife,
yeah.
But like
yeah.
the wife is missing. Like, yeah. When you just see simple
You're
images on the screen,
right.
You feel that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you did that. Or he did that.
That film has one of like my favorite opening credit sequences because it's just shots of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like
and I
town.
Love the way he did the titles, like they vanish instantly. I have never seen like titles like that before. And it just instantly put you in the mindset of the film. And
yeah, you're right. That whole opening, it just conveys my wife is missing by just what is on screen and the music that accompanies it.
Yeah. And he's also setting up that, because a big thing of the book, it's not so much in the movie, but the thing of the book is that like it's set in a modern time where just the economy has ruined things. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of shots in that opening credit sequence of just like abandoned stores.
Dilapidated mall.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just like, I hadn't even read the book, and just knowing when Ben Affleck goes to the bar in the morning, I know he's already kind of in trouble.
Yeah.
Just from the way mm-hmm. the movie is filmed, and that just blew my mind.
It's a wonderful film.
I liked the book, but I think the movie is actually better than the book.
Do too.
And I'm really impressed with is it Gillian?
Gillian, yeah.
Because she adopted her own novel, and I'd imagine it's hard when you're a writer adapting your own work. Because you don't want to cut things, but she cut a lot.
She cut everything that had to be cut.
Right.
That felt a little bloated and unnecessary in the book.
Right. Because what works in a book is not going to work in a film all the time.
Are her other two novels any good?
I haven't read them.
I haven't either.
She has a really good prose style.
Yeah.
It's real because the story of we've said this before, but the story of Gone Girl, it's very pulpy and it could be easily like a Lifetime movie. But mm-hmm. her style of writing is really unique.
And I think that in anybody else's hands other than Fincher, this movie could have been a real piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
Because it would have felt like a Lifetime movie that you paid $12 to go see in a theater.
Right.
But Fincher does everything right. The tone's right. The jokes are there. The drama's there. The tension's there. Everything's perfect about this movie.
Yeah.
All right.
So, Dave, what do you got?
My number three highlighted film of the year would have to be The Guest.
Ah, that's a good choice.
Good pick, Dave.
Thanks, guys. Directed by Adam Wingard. That's how you say that, right?
Wingard?
I say Wingard.
Yeah.
Wingard. Wingard. Yeah, I don't know.
Let's call him and ask him.
And written by his writing partner, Simon Barrett, is the story of a man who comes home for the holidays. But not those holidays. He comes home for Halloween, which is strange. He was in the platoon of this family's son who was killed.
Right.
And so he just kind of knocks on the door one day and is like, I don't want to be a bother, but here I am. You know what I mean? He's just like so charming.
He's instantly likable.
He's instantly manipulating them too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so he kind of wreaks havoc on the town because he's I guess, part of this secret CIA program.
He's like a super soldier, basically. Yeah.
Who might not even be wearing his real face or something.
Yeah. He's a bit of a universal soldier, if you will. Hey, and if you want to hear more about that, we have a exhausting retrospective of the entire franchise of Universal Soldier on cutprintfilm.com. Back to you, Dave Costell.
He gets into the works of things a bit like a gremlin. We have a piece on gremlins on the site.
Expert. So Dan Stevens plays his name is Adam.
Steely Dan is
his
that
name
him?
Adam in the film? What's his name? David. His name's David. Yeah. Sorry,
it's okay.
And I've never watched Downton Abbey, so I've never seen him in anything.
This is a complete transformation.
I was blown away. He's so good in this
body too. He's a weakling in Downton Abbey.
Yeah, he's also a little fucking jacked. Slightly pudgy in Downton Abbey.
But in this, he's obviously been to the gym because he's
been doing shrugs.
He fucking runs from the train station or whatever to their house. The coolest thing about this film is how it looks. It feels like an 80s horror movie.
Yeah, it's very indebted to John Carpenter.
Yes.
And in a good way, not like, oh, he's ripping off John Carpenter. It's like, it feels...
No, it's a love letter.
Right, yeah.
And it hits those same like musical cues and stuff like that.
It's
where
got
it's just
a great
like,
soundtrack.
It really does. It's but got this techno dream poppy soundtrack. Yeah. It's really good.
It's almost like the Drive soundtrack, but not quite.
Yeah.
But the thing about the movie is it's not a horror movie at all. There's
it got marketed as one, but it's not. It's more of like a...
It's a thriller.
Yeah. It's like a thriller with sort of sci-fi elements, I guess you could say.
It's comedy.
Yeah, definite comedy.
But it's just not like laugh out loud funny. No, well, it's it does make you laugh out loud, right. But you're laughing at the absurdity of everything. But it's great. I mean, the more I think about 2014, this movie is one of the most standout films because I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And it just blew me away. I wasn't expecting it to be good either because
This one came out of right field or left field.
Either
we
field.
Don't know. It came out of the concession stand with some red hot dollars.
Of Angels in the Outfield.
The only early promotional material was that shot of Dan Stevens in the red with a gun. And it looked like almost like a secret agent movie. Yeah. And I was like, what is this? And then there was that Halloween shot. There were the two. And I couldn't, in my mind, make the two pictures into a movie.
Yeah, like I was vaguely interested, but then I started hearing a lot of good buzz about it, and so that got me interested. And then, I'm not a big fan of Adam Wingard. I liked, but I didn't love. What the hell is it called? You're Next.
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
You're Next had a really cool concept and it was well made, but it didn't like stick the landing, as they say.
Yeah, I'm Next was much better.
Yes, the sequel. And then the third film, Who's Next?
So we should probably move on to number two at this point.
Yeah, please get us out of this tailspin.
Well, that's you, Jeff. Take it away.
Okay. My number two pick was a film I talked about a few weeks ago. I believe I recommended it. It's Ida.
Oh, God. This movie is so good.
It's great looking. Ida is a Polish language film. It was directed by Paul Polikowski.
Pot?
I'm sure is a fake name. Yes, it was directed by Pol Pot.
the mass murderer.
Polish water ice.
Yeah, on the boardwalk.
Yes, TLC is
like
Polish
Coors
water
Brothers.
Ida is about a nun who is, well, she's a novice, and she's about to take her vow of...
she's nun too, please.
Oh, boy. She's a nun on the run. A regular nun on the run. She's about to about to take her vows to go into the nunnery, and they tell her, hey, your family is out there. This is their address. It's your last living relative. Why don't you go talk to her? And if you still want to become a nun, that's fine. You can come back, but at least do this first. So she goes out and she meets her aunt, and it turns out there are some ties to the Holocaust in here. This film takes place in the mid-60s.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot of plot to this film. It's pretty bare bones here, but the major thing to take away is the aesthetic of this movie. I've never seen so much headroom made shot for shot. There's plenty of room for Jesus, basically. There's so much white space above the characters' heads in any given shot. It's incredible.
It's all black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that?
Yeah, no, I did that. Not. It's a black and white movie, yeah. and it's crisp, and it's gorgeous, and there's so much imagery, Christian and Polish, both.
Yeah.
It's just, it's in this ruined landscape.
It's filmed in a strange format, too. It's all a square.
Yeah. Yeah, the aspect ratio is pretty much, you know, geometrically square.
Something that blew my mind about this, there were two things that I noticed. The camera never moves, nope. Not once in the whole film. So every shot is...
It's fixed.
It's a fixed shot.
Everything in the frame is there deliberately.
Yeah. Which, once you realize it, it really has an impact on...
It's awe-inspiring.
Yeah. The second thing was... Roman Polanski's Knife in the Water, which we talked about, takes place the same exact time this film takes place, but that was filmed then.
Right.
And this film does such a good job of capturing that, what Poland looked like at that time, that it blew me away. You could have released this film in 1963 and it would have looked the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's some of the best. It might be the best cinematography I've seen all year.
Yeah,
I would. If this doesn't win for that, this the Oscars,
and,
I'd be,
and Grand Budapest, which we'll get to later.
Yeah, I'd be absolutely shocked if this didn't pick up at least a nomination.
It's a very good movie, and it's on Netflix right now.
Yes,
so,
it is.
I think that's the first movie we mentioned that you can actually watch.
Yeah, so that's Ida that came out way earlier this year. I believe it came out in March.
It looks like Ida, but it's really Ida.
It's pronounced Ida, IDA.
Yeah, I have yet to see this, and I have to remedy that.
Yeah, there's plenty of films on my must-watch list that I have missed.
So who's next, Chris?
I will go.
You're next.
I'm next.
So my next pick would be a film that came out earlier in the year also. It's called Under the Skin.
Ah, yes.
So this is a... I could see this being a polarizing film because it's very different. It's very weird.
It's divisive, definitely.
It's very slow. This movie is basically, after I saw it, I was like, oh, that was unlike any movie I've ever seen in my life. And that's sort of what impressed me the most about the film. Scarlett Johansson is in it. Scarlett Johansson had a good year with sci-fi.
Great year. Great year.
Yeah. So Scarlett Johansson is a, she doesn't have a name. They call the credits call her the female. She's basically an alien. Not basically, she is an alien.
Yeah.
And she's cruising around the countryside. I believe it's in
Scotland.
Scotland. She's in Scotland, and she's cruising around the countryside of Scotland in this van. And she picks up men, and she takes them back to this house, which is the spookiest looking house ever on the planet. And in the house, there's this it's like a reflective pitch black floor. And she takes off all her clothes, and they follow her across the room, and they sink into the floor, and basically the house like absorbs them.
Yeah,
and it's just right off the bat, just listening to this, I'm sure you're like, that sounds fucking weird, and it is. It's
very weird.
It's a weird, weird movie, but it's just, it's like hauntingly beautiful. This
and it's
film.
Unique. The look of the movie is unique.
Yeah, Jonathan Glazer.
Yeah, it's directed by Jonathan Glazer, he also directed a film called Sexy Beast, which is good, but it's nothing like this movie.
Yeah.
And I don't, like I said, I've never seen a film like this, and it sort of like stunned me and unnerved me. Like I left the film sort of just in a daze because it was just so unlike anything I've ever seen before. And just the way it was made is really unique because the majority of the scenes where Scarlett Johansson pulls over and just starts talking to a guy on the street, they were not staged scenes. There was literally someone hiding in the van with a camera, and these were just guys on the street that she would just pull over and talk to. And it gives it this weird sort of realistic feel. It's also hard to understand what anyone's saying because they all have really thick Scottish accents.
They're all Highlanders.
It makes it feel... it adds like a layer of wrongness to it, though. Like it makes it feel
manipulative.
Like something bad is happening.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's what I liked about that, I said this in my review too, is it makes... Even though Scarlett Johansson is, you know, an alien... Because she's talking to all these people who have these thick accents, she comes off as the most human character in the film. It's a really unique sort
of... Right. I feel like she's also learning what it is to be human as the film goes along. And I think that's an amazing way to frame her story.
Yeah, and she's so good in this. It's like there's not a lot, she doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but
yeah, we left her out of the conversation of best actress, but right. I can't imagine she wouldn't at least pick up a nomination.
This film, it's
I don't
not
think she will.
No, well, this film is not sad. This film's not eligible for Oscars for some reason. Oh, because it's unrated. Anything that's not rated by the MPA,
that sounds about right.
Does not get
this wasn't rated.
No, this is an unrated film.
Rated A for awesome.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of. There's a lot of naked Scarlett Johansson in this, which I'm sure is a selling point for a lot of people who will watch it and then say, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah, if you breathe out of your mouth and that's the selling point of this film for yeah. you, then this might not be for you. But if you like good movies,
yeah.
check Under the Skin out.
And yeah, like I said, I've seen so many movies this year, but this is definitely at the top of the films that just stay with me. Like yeah. I don't, not a week goes by that I don't actually just think about this movie. And I'm just like, oh, that's
sure it doesn't. You perv.
Shut up, Dave.
I'm upset.
So yeah, Under the Skin.
Yeah, this was on the BFI's, the British Film Institute's like number one most watched movie of the year. So.
Ah, good.
Yeah.
I know it's getting
an audience.
It's getting a lot of list. It's making a lot of lists.
It's on Amazon Prime right now streaming. Ah, so if you have that, you can watch it there.
All right. It's on my list right next to your Kiss.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks.
So, Dave, why don't you go, and then we'll take a break.
You want me to go before the break?
Yeah, you go, and then we'll come back and do our number ones. Yeah.
Okay, my number two is a film titled Nightcrawler.
Ah.
All one word.
This is the X-Men
yeah,
film.
Yeah, it's the blue one, played by Alan Cumming.
Directed by Chris's friend, Dan Gilroy.
Yeah, my new BFF, Dan Gilroy.
Ah, yes, I believe you interviewed him earlier.
I did. I got to meet Dan Gilroy and interview him at the Four Seasons Hotel in Philadelphia.
Nice. Oh, and you can check that interview out on cutprintfilm.com.
All right, we got a room together. We got the presidential suite. Mm. We got in bed and we talked about this film.
And then you went home.
Yeah, it was a really weird day.
And I'm pissed because Jake Gyllenhaal came into town that day.
He was there later that night. He showed up for a screening at Temple University, but I did not get to interview him, sadly.
Yeah, so this is Jake Gyllenhaal's transformative role where
he's so good in this.
He transforms into Louis Bloom by losing a bunch of weight and acting insanely creepy.
Yeah.
And it's not like a scary creepy. It's just like this.
It's a detached creepy.
Yeah,
it's this Asperg. Yeah. I don't want to say he's got Asperger's, but he's definitely playing to that side of the spectrum.
He's a sociopath, basically.
Oh, definitely.
He can't relate to humans.
Yeah, but he's combined with his drive, this undying need to
succeed
right. Which is, you know, a commentary on the American dream, where now the only way you can actually get what you want is by being a total sociopath.
Yeah, you have to be ruthless, basically.
Which is essentially the message of the movie. It leaves you feeling very uneasy at the end.
Yes.
Which a lot, it seems like almost all of these films we've recommended so far have that same kind of tone to them, aside from The Guest.
It was a good year for uncomfortable movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This movie and Under the Skin remind me of each other. I don't know why.
Yeah, because they're both about people pretending to be human, basically.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. Just trying to fit in.
Yeah, just like Scarlett Johansson's character, Jake Gyllenhaal, basically, he learns to act human just from watching other people. And like, he reads a lot of stuff on the internet, which is very funny. Like, he reads a lot of like lists and self-help stuff on the internet to learn. And he's always speaking in like this like business jargon. And yes, so that,
a lot of self-help buzzwords.
He's never even slightly concerned for the legality, morality, or any consequence that will come of anything he does.
There's a great, right at the beginning of the film, there's a great scene where the first time we see Jake Gyllenhaal's character, he's cutting down a fence to sell the iron or whatever it's made out of, copper.
Metal, whatever.
And a guard is pulling up, and before the guard gets out of his car, Jake Gyllenhaal keeps doing different smiles, and basically he's practicing how to smile for this guy so he'll look non-threatening. And it's such a great, it's just like right off the bat, you know, there's something wrong with this guy. And Jake Gyllenhaal has had a great year because he also did a film called Enemy, which he's very good in earlier this year, but he's fucking really good in this.
I liked Nightcrawler much better than Enemy.
Yeah, me too.
I loved Enemy, but He's really, I would be very happy if he won Best Actor for this. I don't know if he will, but
there's a chance.
I hope so.
I'm not going to rule him out because...
I think it all depends on if they're going to push Steve Carell for best actor or not. Because if they are, I feel like he's going to get it just because people want him to get it.
I'm torn between Jake Gyllenhaal for this and Ralph Fiennes for Grand Budapest.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think I would give it to Gyllenhaal just because this is such like a career-defining performance.
Yeah, it's like, not like anything he's done before.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
So yeah, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with our number one, and then we're going to talk about our number two, as in shit, for the worst films of the year.
Yes. Which film best represents poo-poo?
We'll be right back. Ah, come forth and let me tell you the tale of cutprintfilm.com, a film review, editorial, and news website.
Have they got any loot there?
They do. Oh, I can't find it. Does anyone know where the loot is?
I have one right here.
Cutprint Film has a merry band of men.
Do they drop the beat?
Yes, they do! It includes More Like Radio, Joystick Jerks, and Anti-Fanboy.
Lemons, lemons, lemons.
Happy New Year, everyone. Yes. Almost.
Happy New Year.
Almost.
I love the crystal clanking.
So this is a podcast.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of like a radio show.
If you're listening to this before the New Year, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to this after New Year's Day, Happy New Year as well.
Yes.
It works for both
anytime.
Both time settings. Yeah.
So we were talking about our best of the year, and we're down to number one.
Mm-hmm.
Our personal number one.
Yes, our personal Jesus, if you will.
Yes, I won't.
reach out and touch face.
Mm-hmm.
Face.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
You want to do any more lyrics?
Please. Please don't stop.
My number one pick for, not necessarily my number one overall pick, but a film that I loved this year is... Cold in July.
Ah, yes.
It came out earlier this year to not much fanfare.
Yeah, sort of got, forgotten. I don't know. It's weird.
And I'm not sure how. I don't know if it's just because it was...
Didn't it go straight to VOD?
Yeah, maybe.
It probably got like a very limited theatrical release.
It stars Don Johnson. That might be one problem.
Who is great in the movie.
Yes, he is. He's fantastic. It also stars Michael C. Hall, who hasn't really had that much success parlaying his TV career. He was in 6 Feet Under and Dexter, which just ended its 78th season.
Yeah.
He's a face that doesn't feel right when you're watching. Like, you know how sometimes...
Michael C. Hall?
Yeah.
He shouldn't be a lead in things. He'd be better as, like, a supporting character.
Yeah, so I agree. Yeah.
I kind of have that problem with John Hamm, too. When I see him in a movie, it just throws me off a little bit.
Yeah, he's just... He exudes television to me.
He's always carrying that TV around. That might be what it is.
Well, that's weird. That's a weird
you
thing.
You just derailed all my thought.
Anyway, Cold in July.
Yeah, Cold in July.
We're like hot in December, am I right, guys?
I hear that. Yeah, greenhouse effect.
Boy, I wish you got hit by a truck. Cold in July opens with Michael C. Hall murdering somebody who's breaking into his house.
Right.
And he thinks it's this man's son who is played by...
Sam Shepard.
Yes, the great Sam Shepard.
He's very good.
But it turns out it's not his son. And they... Hijinks ensue, if you will.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff going on.
It's a crime drama, and it's really, really good. This is superb acting. The direction is not really a whole lot to write home about.
It's not great, but this is another film that has a lot in debt to John Carpenter. It's got that Carpenter feel.
Absolutely.
It's kind of interesting that two films this year are very Carpenter-esque.
Back when John Carpenter was a relevant director.
Yeah, back in the good old days when he really made good movies.
But yeah, it was directed by Jim Mickle, who has done some good stuff. He did Stakeland, which was good.
Yeah.
And he did We Are What We Are, which is even better. And then this is his follow-up to that, which is his best work to date.
This movie's full of anxiety, right? Yes, Michael C. Hall gets himself in a bit of a pickle.
Yeah, well, first he has a mustache and a mullet, and that's the start of things. It's all downhill from there.
Yeah, you can't.
he buys a gun, and he just, it's downhill.
It's a Southern Gothic. That's the genre it's in.
It's great.
So like True Blood, kind of?
No.
This is good.
Yeah, this isn't full of bullshit.
It is full of bullets, though. There's lots of violence.
Yes.
There's a
sequence near the end. It's not really a shootout. It's just like an action sequence, and it's so well done.
It's one of my, and that's where the direction does come into play. Because most of this film is just point and shoot and letting the actors do all the lifting. But that final sequence is tense from the get-go and right to the very end of the film. It's a nail biter, folks.
It does a really good job with that like 80s feel without being obtrusive. Like there's the fashion, and there's like a video store that plays into the film, which I thought was it's kind of like nostalgic. Like, oh, remember video stores?
Yeah, Michael C. Hall has a mullet that isn't a crazy mullet. Yeah, like it's not this insane cartoon mullet.
It's a believable, like, people would have that haircut.
Right, basically. Like, this guy spends his days hammering nails into wood and comes home to have a few Budweisers. That's the type of mullet this is.
He works at a frame store, I believe.
Yeah. So
I gotta watch that.
That's really good. Awesome.
Don Johnson's fantastic in it. He plays a
he's like a private eye.
Fixer.
Yeah.
he's a private eye for ne'er-do-wells, if you will.
He drives around like a convertible. It's a really good performance.
Yeah, and like I said, Sam Shepard is fantastic.
He's very good, yeah.
So yeah, Cold in July is my number one pick. And I think that is also on Netflix.
I think if not, it should be. well, my film, my number one, is on Netflix, and it's also, like Cold in July, a small film, but this was actually my number one film of the year for my personal list, and it is Blue Ruin.
Nice.
So this is another movie that came out of nowhere. I've never heard of Jeremy Saulnier before.
Me not.
No.
He has a film. He directed another film called Murder Party, which looks terrible. So I'm never going to see
it. I'll leave that off my watch list.
But this is one of those movies that does so much with so little. There's almost nothing to this movie, but it's fantastic. It's very reminiscent of early Coen Brothers movies, like their first film, Blood Simple. Macon Blair, another person I've never heard of before. He's the lead character. His name is Dwight, and he basically lives in his car. He's homeless, and we learn that his father was murdered.
Both
his parents were murdered, and the person who went to jail for murdering them is getting out of jail. And so basically, this guy Dwight, who's basically lived outside of society for years, he reintegrates himself into society. He cuts off his bum beard. He breaks into a house and gets, you know, real clothes. Also, he can just kill this guy, basically. And there's twists and turns from there. I won't give it all away, because I feel like it's one of those movies, the less you know, the better. But it's so well done, and it's funny. It's darkly funny. There's a lot of dark comedy in this.
It's like a bumbling revenge
tale. It's a revenge story, and it's probably the most realistic portrayal of if, like, an everyman like you or I got revenge on somebody and the fallout of that.
Getting mixed up in something that you have no preparation.
He is
he's not an action hero. He's just some guy.
He is in no way a smooth operator.
Right. What I loved most about this movie was that it subverts your expectations, because it'll set something up, and just from years of watching films,
we're conditioned to think, oh, I know how this is going to play out.
I know exactly what he's going to do, and the film does the complete opposite. And it doesn't cheat. It's not like, oh, it's doing it to pull a rug out from it. It just does it, and it does it in a really naturalistic way. And you're sort of like, I didn't see that coming. I can't believe that I did that.
And I love that when he tries a trick, it's always something that you've seen in a movie before.
Right,
too. Like when he leaves the sink running upstairs.
Right.
And it's like totally like a Home Alone type thing.
Right, yeah.
That just made it more like, this guy's only point of reference is movies. He has no business actually killing people.
It's a terrific movie.
It's so well acted. Macon Blair is phenomenal in this, and that's another actor performance I would love to get like an Oscar nomination. It won't, because this film, I feel like, is too small for that.
but he's so good in this.
It should be noted that we picked this as our best film of the first half of the year.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's still.
And I do stand by that. It should definitely have been considered best film of the year in the first half of the year.
It's just shot. I don't know the exact budget for this film, but I think it's definitely under like $50,000, and it looks great. It's so well, and it just. I don't know, I'm always impressed when a low budget film does things better than a big budget film,
because
you have to try extra hard when you're making a film with a low budget, and they totally knock us out of the park. And it's put Jeremy Saulnier on my radar.
He's a director to watch.
His next film is called Green Room, and it's about a band that gets trapped in a bar by neo-Nazis, and I can't wait to see that.
I love it.
Because Patrick Stewart is playing the leader of the neo-Nazis.
I love it.
Right away, I'm like, I got to see that.
I absolutely love it.
So so Blue Ruin, that's definitely on Netflix. Seek it out.
Dave?
My number one film of the year is Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. A film that I...
What's that about?
It's about like space and stuff. I don't know. I kind of fell asleep halfway through. It was very long.
Are there sound problems? Because I feel like there haven't been enough think pieces about how there are sound problems.
Well, while the rocket is blasting off into space, it's hard to hear what people are saying.
Oh.
I don't know why.
Kind of like if a real rocket were blasting off, I guess you could say.
Dave, why is this your number one movie of the year?
I loved it. It was just so cinematic. It was
absolutely
a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was,
that's probably the best way to phrase it.
It was just such a movie event, and I feel like it was the only one of the year, besides maybe Birdman was the only one that felt close to this as far as like feeling like a movie.
Yeah.
I
love this movie. I didn't love it as much as I wanted. This was my most anticipated movie of the year, but I loved it, but I didn't love it as much as I wanted to, I guess I would
say. Yeah, I kind of like intentionally tried not to build this up too much so that I wouldn't blow it.
I feel like when I watch it again, I'm going to appreciate it even more.
Oh, I can't wait to watch this again. Yeah. I really can't wait to watch this movie again.
And I'm not a huge Nolan fan. Like, I appreciate Nolan, but this is definitely my favorite movie of his so far. I also liked the science in it.
Right.
Like, it does these quirky things with time and stuff, but it, at the same time, is never too science fiction-y. Like, they brought in a physicist, I forget his name. He's like highly respected.
Isaac Newton, I believe his name.
They just brought his bones in.
They shook him up in whatever direction they were pointing.
His powdered wig in.
No, but there's some physicist they brought in to help write the script so that it wasn't doing things that you can't actually do. And then when it came out, everyone was like, this movie's so unrealistic.
It's like, shut up.
And they looked to Neil deGrasse Tyson, because he's pretty much the authority on movies not being scientific.
Right.
And Neil deGrasse Tyson was like, nope. This film does everything the way it should
be
done.
Now, what does Neil deGrasse Tyson think about Hocus Pocus? How's the science in that? Is it sound science?
Well, the moon isn't in the correct spot for that time
and
year.
Everything in Hocus Pocus is correct except for when the one witch uses a vacuum cleaner for a broom. Come on, get real.
Well, that's just for hijinks.
But yeah, Interstellar, what I love the most about Interstellar is how earnest it is, and not earnest as in Ernest Saves Christmas.
Ernest P. Worrell.
Because I just knew someone was going to make that joke, so I tried to head them off at the pass.
And that someone was me. You know what I mean, Vern.
But Christopher Nolan gets a lot of shit for being unemotional with his films, and this film is very emotional, and I feel like the emotion, it's never manipulative. It's never cloying. It's never feels like he's faking it. Like, it feels like he really means this stuff. And like, a lot of people have pointed out, like, Anne Hathaway's character has this speech about, you know, how like love transcends space and time. And
which I loved.
Like, I agree that can sound hokey, but it didn't seem hokey to me in the film. And I've heard a lot of people be like, oh, what a hokey line. And
I liked that idea, but I'm one of the people that felt that Nolan is faking it.
Really? You think so? I didn't get
because
that.
I'm a human robot.
That's true.
I could spot another human robot.
I can spot one a mile away,
So,
but I do love is good.
I do love that idea, though, that love is something that transcends.
It's like a force.
I think that's a fantastic theme to work with, especially in a movie.
That could be a whole. I mean, and it kind of is an underlying theme for the movie, but it could be explored as its own movie.
And yeah. I just love like the world the film sets up. It's a, such a
yeah Earth.
It's such a it's such a comprehensive universe this film creates
I
for itself.
Thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Like there's this whole there's a new Dust Bowl going on. I love there's a scene where Matthew McConaughey and his kids, they chase this, it's like an Indian surveillance drone down. Mm-hmm. And basically the daughter treats it like an animal, basically. They're treating it, she's like, oh, can we let it go? Like yeah. It's like a thinking thing.
I think Jeff and I said this before, but the Lazarus missions themselves could have been their own movie.
Yeah.
And I would love to see 12, like,
oh my God.
Like 20-minute films.
Yeah, that would be great.
I would absolutely love that. God, I wish somebody would do that.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan, maybe.
No, I feel like...
No, I don't want him doing it.
I don't know, I kind of feel bad for this movie, because I feel like a lot of people...
people wanted to hate
shat
it.
On it. I forget, I think it was... It was some New York
rag. Was it Armand White?
No, it was some New York rag.
I'd have to say.
It's probably the New York Post then.
No, it was some.
New York Times?
It was, I think it was like Time Out New York. It was one of those fucking New York magazines. They named this as the worst movie of the year. And that infuriates me because are you insane?
Taxi Cab Weekly. Is that it? No, and this film kind of made me reevaluate going into certain movies with like a fucking. Like wanting to pick a fight.
Yeah.
And
if you go in with a chip on your shoulder, you're going to find a reason to fight. So.
Yeah. Like a lot of critics do with Birdman, yeah. Another movie we universally loved, which we didn't mention tonight. But yeah, it just made me.
The Village Voice. They're the ones who named it the worst film of the year. And it's like, really?
Well, they're not the voice of this village. Am I right, boys?
You said it.
Yeah, the voice of Greenwich Village.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. That makes sense, though.
Fucking beatniks.
yeah, and it just made me think, like, maybe from now on, I'll just try not to hate movies as much as I do sometimes.
Yeah, I hear you.
Because there were people who were like, this part right here doesn't make sense. This small 15 minutes.
Yeah, it feels like there were things that people just wanted to pick. Like, they wanted to pick on this movie. Yeah, like,
there's no way you could be behind that many bookshelves at once.
Good Lord.
So, Dave, what's your number one? Oh, you just said it. I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of going into movies, trying to pick a fight, let's talk about our least favorite movies of the year.
Well, do you want to talk about that or do you want to talk about the one that slipped through the cracks?
I'd like to do that one last.
All right. So, yeah.
It's the most
piss and vinegar
awful
right
movie of the year.
Wow. It's like you planned
Hang
that.
On. I do have some production for this.
It's the most... awful movie of the year. That's a hard one to keep.
Yeah, you can't really keep in time with that. Jeff, what's yours?
Okay. My least favorite film this year is something that I knew it was going to be a piece of poop when I went into it.
A piece of poop?
I wasn't surprised, but I was surprised at how much I hated it. I couldn't believe it. It's Tammy, starring Melissa McCarthy. I
thought it was going to be Palo Alto.
No, it was not Palo Alto. Palo Alto was on my list of worst movies, but it was at the bottom of that list. Tammy is a movie about this disgusting pig woman who goes on adventures ruining the lives of everybody that she comes in contact
Does
with.
Does she fall down a lot?
Falls down all the time.
Oh, that's always funny.
She's constantly eating. She's nagging. She is a nightmare person, and there's not one joke to be found in this. This is another case of bad improv from... it's about 100 minutes long, and it's 100 minutes of bad improv.
Ugh.
It just reeks of trying too hard.
Yeah, that was a film... The second I saw the poster for it, which is Melissa McCarthy's airbrushed puss, not her pussy, her face,
yeah.
looking just like making a stupid...
Yeah, she's making a...
dumb face. I'm just like, I'll never see that. And I was right to.
And she's wearing hideous clothes, and that's supposed to be funny, and she's just a slob. And this was directed by her husband, which shocked me.
Like, yeah, you would think... You would think this was her opportunity... To prove her, like, oh, she can do other things, but no.
Well, I said...
I think that's the problem, is that she's not a...
Like, well, see, I saw St. Vincent, which I did not like the film, but she's in that film, and she plays a normal human
right,
being.
Right, she plays a person, right?
And she's actually really good in that, and she has, like, a scene in that film where she has to be, like, dramatic and upset about something. And it's such good acting. I was like, what the fuck is she doing with her career?
And that's what I want to see her doing.
Right.
I want to see her doing roles where she's a believable person that just happens to have some funny lines. She's not this cartoon character because I don't like it. She's not good at it. She's over the top every time she does it. I didn't like her in Bridesmaids. I hate her in Tammy. She's the same character in The Heat with Sandra Bullock and The Identity Thief. She is the same character over and over again.
I believe the character's name is Fatty Fall Down.
That's it. Yeah. It's Fatty Falls a lot.
And I liked her in The Heat. I'll say that.
Did you?
Yeah.
You're thinking of Michael Mann's Heat.
Yeah. But she wasn't in that, Dave.
I think
you're thinking of Robert De Niro.
This just reveals that she's not a great writer.
No, she's a horrendous writer. She has no self-editing ability.
Right.
Yeah. Everything's gold to her. And like I said, it's just her trying so hard to hit you with punchline after punchline, and not one of them sticks.
I would love to see her in a comedy where not once they point out that she's fat. How refreshing would that be? If they made a movie with a overweight actress, and not once are they like, look at how fat she...
It's
like,
so unnecessary.
Like, can we stop? It's the 21st century.
Why not
can we get beyond...
Write some jokes, and don't rely on physical... Just her physical features.
Just enough.
I think she's going to play Dan Aykroyd in Ghostbusters 3, though.
She'll actually play Dan Aykroyd.
The actor Dan Aykroyd. Yeah.
I hear you believe in aliens.
She's playing Dan Aykroyd as the judge in Nothing But Trouble, the best film of the 21st century. And it didn't even come out. So, yeah, that's my worst film of the year is Tammy.
All right. Well, I have a tie. I have two films.
Because right. I have a bow tie.
Oh, well, it looks lovely.
Good for you. I have a cravat, too. Who do you think you are?
Why'd you say good for you? I was complimenting it. I said, that looks lovely. You said good for you.
I told you I was full of piss and vinegar earlier.
So my tie for the worst film of the year is Sabotage and Dumb and Dumber 2. So Sabotage is a film I wanted to like because I like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I want him to have a comeback. I want him to be in fun movies. And I liked The Last Stand, and I liked Escape Plan.
I loved Escape Plan.
I don't like any of these.
You haven't even seen them.
Never saw them. But you are banned from the conversation.
Both of those movies, both Escape Plan and The Last Stand, they're stupid movies, but they're enjoyable. They're fun. They know they're stupid.
Escape Plan might be the best Arnold performance I've seen in two decades.
He's really he's actually legitimately good in that film. It's like an actual good performance. Yeah. But Sabotage is shit. It's directed by David Ayer. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah. Yep.
He also made Fury, which I didn't like, but that movie's better than this. He's doing Suicide Squad. Speaking of Suicide Squad, I walked out of this film wanting to kill myself. This is the most aggressively bad film I've ever seen. It's nasty from beginning to end. Arnold Schwarzenegger, he leads this team of badasses. They all have nicknames. And you could tell there was a lot of improv-ing going on because there's a lot of characters that just keep saying what the fuck? And holy and shit. And
One of my favorite pieces of trivia about this movie is that one of the guys in Arnold's crew that has a nickname is played by Josh Holloway, who is, you may remember from the Aerosmith video, Crying, and also because he mugs Alicia Silverstone, and also he was in Lost as the character Sawyer.
Okay.
And he plays a character named Eddie Neck Johnson.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I love it.
Hey,
go on, Chris.
It's just... no one in this movie behaves like a human being. They act like monsters.
Don't they hate women?
Oh my god! There's a woman on the team, and they're just and she hates women too.
Good for her.
You can tell you can tell this is a film written only by men who've never actually had a real conversation with women, because all the women in the film behave like fucking lunatics.
That's good.
It's a shitty.
They must be on their period, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's at least 10 on the rag jokes in this film. Because why not?
Never gets old.
That's always funny.
What about Dumb and Dumber? You gonna?
Yeah. So Dumb and Dumber 2. I was not looking forward to this film, and oh man, was it bad. I did not laugh. I saw this in a packed theater. Everyone in the theater just laughing their asses off.
It's crazy.
I sat there like an Easter Island statue, just a blank stone face, wondering what was happening. Why is everyone laughing at this film? And I loved the first Dumb and Dumber when I saw it as a kid. I haven't seen it since I was younger, but I'm sure I would still enjoy it.
Yeah.
This is another movie that's just aggressively, it's just mean. It's a mean movie, which the first movie is not, it has mean stuff in it, but all the mean stuff that happens in the first movie, it's done by characters who are villainous In this film, Harry and Lloyd, they're just assholes, and I hated it. I hate this movie.
When I watched the trailer for this when it first came out, I was in my living room. I put it on the screen, and every single joke landed with a fart and a tumbleweed rolled across my living room floor due to the silence.
There's not a single funny joke in it. The only thing I laughed at is a character gets hit by a train. And I think I laughed because in my head I was picturing myself getting hit by a train so I wouldn't have to watch the rest of the film.
Wishing for that sweet release of the train murder.
It's like, I wish a train would just plow into this theater and kill me so I wouldn't have to see the rest of this film. So Dumb and Dumber 2.
My worst movie of the year is Terry Gilliam's Zero Theorem, starring Christoph Waltz.
I haven't even seen this, but it just depresses me.
I gotta say, this and Mood Indigo are two movies that you saw that I will never see, but they looked like an utter chore to sit through.
Speaking of wanting trains to run you over.
So how long is this movie?
It just never ends.
I believe it's still playing.
And there's... It's like... Remember I Made Brazil?
Right.
And 12 Monkeys?
Yeah.
And this is not funny, but it's trying to be.
Man, I used to love Terry Gilliam, but he's one of those directors I'm just like, I think you should probably hang it up.
Isn't this there's an extended cut?
Oh, God.
And you watched that one?
That was Mood Indigo.
Oh, okay.
Dave watched the French version of Mood Indigo, which is 12 hours long.
Mood Indigo is a close... second for worst movie of the year, but this is worse because it's Terry Gilliam and people actually said they liked this one.
Yeah.
And I don't get why. It's just this guy who works for this company and he's making little fucking things that don't even exist. They're on a computer, which is like a commentary of what we all do.
Right. Oh, how funny.
And he lives in a church and then is going crazy. It's not good. It's all the bad things Terry Gilliam does put into one movie.
I think I'll just eat 2 dozen eggs and hope for salmonella poisoning.
And Christoph Waltz is like one of my most exciting actors. Like he's one where I'm like, oh, I'll watch this. And then with this and Big Eyes, he disappointed me both times.
I have a theory that he's only a good actor when he works with Quentin Tarantino because I've never seen him in another movie where I thought, oh, he was really good in that. Yeah. Anytime he's in a Tarantino film, which has been twice, but he's so good. Every other movie he's in, I'm like, man, he's not a good actor. I don't know how Tarantino is able to get such great performances out of him.
I'm assuming he'll be good in Bond.
I hope so, because it seems like he was born to play a Bond villain, but who knows? Because he played a villain in The Green Hornet, and he wasn't very good in that either.
Yeah, so that's my worst.
All right. Yeah. Now we're going to pick some films that kind of slipped through the cracks in 2014.
We have one each.
You may not have seen them.
They slipped on a banana peel and flew right off radar.
And they made a woo-woo sound when it happened. So here, I have a piece of production for this segment.
Oh, how's it go?
Hey, why didn't you see me when I came out? I'm a movie that you missed.
Very good.
Perfect.
Very good. All right.
Perfect.
I guess I'll go first.
Please do.
Yeah, let's make these ones fast because everyone tuned out by now.
Tikitaka. this picture that slipped through the cracks did so because it really wasn't released in theaters.
Did it step on a crack and break its mother's back?
It did. Oh. It certainly did. It was very rude to its mother. And I was going to put this on my best of the year list, but because I set some guidelines for that for Cutprint Film, where it had to have come out in theaters and not just festivals.
No pornography.
No pornography whatsoever. Delete it all. I couldn't put it on the list. But this film I saw at the Philadelphia Film Festival. It's called Force Majeure, and it is a fantastic movie. It's a comedy. We talked about it on the show earlier this year.
Did we?
Briefly.
Yeah.
Briefly. Briefly. It's about a family that's on holiday in the French Alps. And they are eating lunch, and a controlled avalanche comes barreling down the hill, and they think that it's going to actually get out of control and bury them alive. And the father grabs his cell phone and abandons his family and runs away.
I love that he grabs his phone.
Yep. And then when the snow settles and everybody realizes, oh, all right, we're good, he comes walking back like nothing happened. And it's the whole film deals comedically with the fallout of that one action. It kind of reminds me of that film, The Loneliest Planet.
Yeah.
Only I liked this and I hated that
movie.
Well,
this is less... this is pretty serious.
It's serious, but this comedy is so funny.
Yeah.
It's just... The performances are... It's a dark comedy, yeah, for sure, but it's so funny and it's so profound. It's such a good movie. It looks great. The music is amazing. There's this symphonic orchestra playing that sort of reminds me of 2001, A Space Odyssey, and you get these beautiful shots of the French Alps because they're on a ski holiday. It's wonderful. It's a hilarious movie. Not many people have seen it. I think you can download it. I think you can buy it on iTunes.
I saw it. I liked it. I didn't like it as much as you did, but I think that's just because of how uncomfortable it made me.
Oh, it's definitely some uncomfortable.
And that
topics.
Scene you were just talking the scene.
Yeah. And that's not a spoiler because that's in the trailer. That's like what the movie hinges.
It's on the poster of the film.
Yeah, let's relax, everyone.
It's in David Elric's top 25. Like that scene is cut into it, and I've seen that like 50 times now. So every time I watch it, I notice that what's his name? Can you remember the dad's name?
Tomas.
His name is Force Majeure.
He actually, when he first sees the avalanche, he grabs his son and is thinking about running away with him, but then lets go of him and grabs his phone.
That's probably what I would do because I'm a total scumbag.
It's a great movie, and this character Tomas is just this weak-willed man and whose instincts betray him, as he says later on. It's a funny movie.
Oh, God, the scene when he's crying outside the hotel room.
I still have not seen it. It's at once
heartbreaking and hilarious, and you're kind of at odds with yourself. Do I laugh or do I like squeeze my fist as tight as I can because I'm so bothered by this?
Because it's such a conundrum and it never gets better.
It's a great movie. Force Majeure.
All right. My pick is a film that I feel like no one saw for some reason, but they should have. So Nicolas Cage is a really good actor. It's hard to remember that because
he's a hardworking actor.
Oh, he does so much garbage. Nicolas Cage has a lot of gambling debts, and he bought a lot of castles, so he needs to pay those off. So he takes pretty much any film offered to him.
Rage, anyone?
Left Behind?
But every now and then...
The Dying of the Light?
Oh, my God. Every now and then he does a film, and you're like, oh, he's a really good actor. And the film this year was called Joe. It's directed by David Gordon Green. But Nicolas Cage plays, he's like an ex-con, and he runs this crew that basically they cut down poison trees. And this boy, this like a 15-year-old boy, and he lives with his really abusive father, played by, this guy's name was Gary Poulter. He wasn't actually an actor. He was basically like a homeless guy that David Gordon Green found. And this guy is really good. He did a really good job. And before the film came out, they found him dead.
Oh, good.
I believe they found him dead on like some train tracks. He basically died. But it's a really...
Was that Nick Cage you're talking about?
No, yeah. Nicolas Cage died, by the way.
I'm sure I'd have heard that.
It was breaking news. Didn't you see it on cutprintfilm.com? But there's not a lot to the movie. It's like a character study, but Nicolas Cage is really good in this. It's one of his best performances. The movie is really good. It's really well done. And I just wish more people had seen it because...
I didn't even see it.
It's so easy. Like, Nicolas Cage is basically... He's like a walking meme now at this point, where it's just like, Nicolas Cage, you say his name and you laugh.
What wigs he got on today?
Right. And I wish more people had seen this because more people would be like, oh, I forgot Nicolas Cage is a great actor when he wants to be. So I would urge you to seek this film out. It's called Joe, directed by David Gordon Green.
Mm-hmm. My under-the-radar banana peel movie is...
it's quite a mouthful.
This banana is overripe. We should throw it out.
It's a movie that pretty much nobody saw because there were three versions of it, and it made things a bit confusing.
You're going to do this to us?
The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. There was The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, Her... Uh-huh. The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, Him, and The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, Them.
And then there's Sometimes Why, right? Is that one of them?
What?
And I saw Them.
So you saw it's like a final cut.
Yeah, the Weinstein.
You saw the mashup version.
Yeah.
The Weinstein brothers bought both movies and then forced the director to edit them into one film so that everyone could go and enjoy it in one punch, which I thought was good. You know, I really liked it, but a lot of critics who have seen the separate movies say that this does a disservice to them, which I can see. But I don't know if I could sit through 6 hours. Like, I like that this was a more accessible version of the story. Yeah. It involves a couple who their infant son died, and just the living in the wake of that from both of their perspectives. They've kind of separated.
That's a regular pet cemetery.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's a miserable movie, but it's beautifully filmed. It's very real in how it deals with character moments and emotion and the like feelings. It's very good. It's a movie you should both probably see.
Is it real, like, in the sense of Blue Valentine, that type of
where you want to slit your wrist when it's over?
I refuse to watch Blue Valentine because I'm afraid that
should watch it. It's that's an excellent film.
Just make sure you take a lot of uppers before you watch it.
I would say yes.
Okay, so without watching the movie, you'd say yes.
I've heard a lot of I've heard a lot of what Blue Valentine's about. But this is not as bleak as that. Okay. I would say that this has more of a.
There's hope in it.
Saying. This leaves you with a little bit of hope at the end.
Unlike Blue Valentine, where there is no hope to be had.
This is kind of like that movie where they plant their dead kid in the ground and he comes back to life.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Forrest Dennis Gump. The Menace. Oh. The one with Walter Matthau.
I love
Timothy
the scene.
Green. That's the one I'm thinking of.
I love the scene when he's looking for the GD garden lanterns in the garage. Martha won't leave him alone. Okay.
That was a true story, that film.
Mm-hmm. He was a real menace.
So what are we going to do next? Are we done? We moving on?
Yeah, let's recommend some movies.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's recommend it.
And you wouldn't believe it. I have a piece of production for that, too.
Should all movies be forgotten? Let's pick some movies now. It's the time of the show where we pick some movies, so let's all pick some now.
So let's all
some
pick
of that rhyming
some
was clumsy,
now.
I feel.
What, you don't want to like to rhyme now with now? I think it was nuanced.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Good work, Chris.
Yeah, that was good.
Thanks.
That might be our most highly produced piece of the year.
I tried really hard.
A lot of reverb. I liked it.
Yeah.
Like beautiful, crisp piano.
I used Phil Spector's wall of sound to make that.
Did you play the piano yourself?
Yeah, I did. I took lessons just
somebody else worked the pedals, though. All right, who's going first? I went last week. I won't dare go again.
I'll go first to head Dave off in case he wants to pick the same movie. So,
I'll go first.
This is a film that also came out this year. It's called The Trip to Italy. It's actually a follow-up to The Trip, which I also saw and didn't like as much. And this actually originally started out as a TV series on the BBC, and it was edited into a film.
I'm already interested.
It was directed by Michael Winterbottom, which is a delightful name.
It is.
It's a cheeky name.
Literally.
Yeah. And it stars Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. And I've heard of Steve Coogan before. I've never heard of Rob Brydon. And there's literally nothing to this movie. It's basically two guys. They're playing thinly veiled versions of themselves. They drive around Italy going to restaurants, and then they basically just riff on each other, just tell jokes.
It reminded me of like a slightly scripted version of Jerry Seinfeld's Comedian Cars Getting Coffee.
Right.
Okay.
It's just them driving to the next place where they eat and then make fun of each other for a half hour, and they
just
drive.
I don't know. Like, there's nothing to this movie, but it's so enjoyable, mostly because their performances are just delightful. It's fun to watch them play off of each other, because there's this sort of like they're friends, but they sort of hate each other, and it's just really interesting the way they play. And
it's never really acknowledged that they hate each other.
Right,
I like that about it, because the guy gets a role in a movie, and every time he brings it up, the other guy's like, "Well, you, it's not a big part." Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he keeps saying stuff like that.
And even though it's really funny, there's this sort of like sadness in it, like like the last like 10 minutes of the movie are real. I'm not gonna say really sad, but it surprised me at how like just melancholy it was, and it was just so
melancholy, because they even discussed that during the film, like just melancholy in old age, and
and there's a lot of like, it's a very British movie, because there's a lot of references to Lord Byron and British poets, and you have to be in the right mood for this movie. If you're not, you're going to be like, this is bullshit, turn it off. But
do you have any smelling salt? get me out of this.
Which kind of like parallels the story of Byron and Shelley, who were two British guys who went around having fun all the time and drinking.
Telling jokes. So yeah, it's on Netflix. Like I said, it's a sequel to The Trip, which I also watched and did not like as much, but I really liked this, The Trip to Italy.
Did they eat any pizza pie?
They didn't. There's no pizza pie in the film.
There's this bit where they start making fun of Christian Bale, and I was fucking dying at how funny it is.
Yeah, they're very good at impressions. They keep doing Michael Caine impressions, which are
You know what? I do love a good Michael Caine impression.
They're really good Michael Caine impressions.
Our Michael Caine. Yeah.
So, The Trip to Italy.
Next.
Okay. That might be the classiest transition yet.
Jeff, try not to jump over the table and kill me.
All right.
Is it Palo Alto? Because I'll kill you.
Let me take my moon shoes off.
I'm going to recommend a 2014 British film directed by Mike Lee.
Stop.
Called Mr. Turner.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Hang on. I have a piece of production for that.
This is the most shocking development on Cut Print Film yet.
Oh, I boy. Actually enjoyed Mr. Turner quite a bit.
I'll have to conjugate on that.
What's Mr. Turner about, Dave?
Okay, Mr. Turner is about the famous British painter
Tina Turner,
J. M. W. Turner. But it's cool because it shows this period of time that we're used to seeing in movies, but only overly romanticized in adaptations of things like Pride and Prejudice and Jane Eyre and blah, blah, blah. All those period pieces, you get a very lovely version of this London, England, whatever. And in this, you get the real grime of it. And I liked that a lot. I liked that it was showing you a real story of somebody who lived a pretty extraordinary life during that time period. And it's cool. It's very well directed. There are some beautiful shots in this movie.
There are.
That look like paintings.
I mean, from the trailer, I could see visually it looked
visually really,
it's authentic.
Right.
It looks authentic. I will give it that.
But it seamlessly blends the like sublime painting look into the grimy city somehow without like being too jarring of a transition. And I was wondering if they did that in post, like made those scenery shots look like paintings.
Possibly.
But it's beautiful, and it's very hard to understand what Timothy Spall is saying half the time.
That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, so it can be frustrating, but I liked it.
I think he gives a great performance. I like Timothy Spall. I think he's a really, really phenomenal actor. I fucking hated this movie. I hated it.
Everyone's acting. Everyone's doing their part. And it just...
I can't understand what anyone's saying other than when they say Mr. Turner. I think there's just this air of elitism to the film.
Yeah, but I feel that that's intentional.
I get that from every Mike Lee film.
Well, this is my first Mike Lee joint, so I've never... I've never seen any other one, but yeah, I couldn't tell because I got that too, and I couldn't tell if the elitism was like a commentary on, you know, how there's real issues in this society because it transitions into kind of the Dickensian era, and you're still seeing like a rich person essentially who doesn't have those problems. So
everything about Mr. Turner looks like something I would normally love. It's a period piece. It's got absolute top-notch acting. It looks amazing, like you said. It looks intentionally like a painting. And yet, I just don't care about it at all. I don't care about anyone in the film. I don't like anybody in the film. I don't like the film.
Yeah, I have to say Mr. Turner is not a very likable character.
No,
so.
And I understand that.
Well,
that's
he beat up Tina Turner all the time.
You're thinking of Ike Turner.
Oh, is that not? I'm sorry, I wasn't listening to
right.
any of this.
Beating up Tina Turner is an Ike Turner joint.
All right, sorry.
I'll
go back to reading.
I'd like
about
to give Cut Print Film a plethora of perspectives, so I'm
intrigued that you picked this.
I am too, and I'm also
I haven't
livid.
Seen it, and
I'm actually livid. Yeah.
Jeff just took out his Dave Voodoo doll and stuck a pin right in the crotch.
I pulled the arms off.
But then he kissed it, so it's okay.
All is forgiven.
Yeah, our one of our contributors, Marcus Penn, loved this movie. In fact, I think it was in his top films of the year.
Yeah, he's a big Mike Lee fan, though.
Yeah.
And a big Spike Lee fan, too. So.
Yes, he is. He loves Mike. He loves both the Lees, the Lee brothers. He loves their ice cream, and he loves their films, the Lee brothers. I think they make ice cream. I'm not sure.
You're thinking of Jason Lee.
Oh.
No, you're not.
All right, so what was your pick, Mr. Turner?
Yeah.
All right, it's my turn
We just fought about it.
Yeah. Do you remember? You stabbed him.
Oh, shit. Hang on. You stepped all over that. Let me play it again.
Sorry.
There we go.
I
didn't want to...
Yeah, we can't miss the fart sound.
Deprive the audience of the fart noise. My pick this week is, you know, as we go into the new year, I'm picking something from yesteryear.
Ooh.
It's a 1939 film directed by the great John Ford. It's called Stagecoach, and it stars John Wayne. Do you like this movie?
I do like this. I like most John Ford movies.
Yeah, I do too.
John Wayne Gacy?
No, not John. Pogo the Clown.
Yeah,
that makes no appearance here.
He strangles men with his underwear and then buries them under his house.
Yeah, this is... basically, it's about a group of people who have to take the stagecoach to a settlement. I think it's an army settlement. I'm not sure if I'm remembering that.
It's been
forever since I've seen this film, but it's one of the first like epic tales told on film. It's a great Western. There's gunfights. John Wayne is in it, and he is absolutely fantastic. You see why he was a movie star. He's handsome. He has swagger. He's just the real deal. And there's a drunk doctor who is just obsessed with drinking, and people pay him in booze. And he's a cartoon character come to life. There's some racist stuff in it.
You would expect. From
yeah, it's 1939, so you got to give it some leeway there. But they're on the run from Geronimo, and there's lots of talk of Injuns and Redskins and things like that.
Timely,
but it's a great character piece. There's I think it's about 7 or 8 characters that have to work together, and they're all individuals, and they all have a purpose in the story,
right.
And it really, really works.
And this is a bit of trivia. When Orson Welles was prepping Citizen Kane, he had never directed a movie before. So to prepare, to basically teach himself how to direct, he watched Stagecoach 40 times.
Wow. Oh, yeah, there's an amazing sequence where they're being chased by Native Americans, and I can't even imagine how they actually filmed it, because there are men being run over by horses, and I have to assume that there were actually men being run over by horses, because it's 1939, and I don't think the Screen Actors Guild was in effect yet.
I think they used CGI for that, Jeff.
Do you think this is partially going to be inspired in Hateful Eight?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because it sounds similar to what he's going for there.
I feel like most... like John Ford westerns inspire most westerns, really.
And this is one of this is one of the most revered westerns of all time.
Yeah, it's number 63 on the AFI list. Yeah,
it's an absolute, and I'm so you'll be getting to that eventually
next year when I get back to my AFI piece.
But Stagecoach, 1939, directed by John Ford, starring John Wayne,
starring John Ford as himself. Well, turn it down, Robert.
Robert Loge's skeleton is playing the ivory, tickling the ivories over there.
Yeah, I forgot to feed him this week.
Gone but not forgotten.
So, that's our show this week.
Yeah. So what do we got?
That's the end of season one.
Yeah, I hope you all liked it. We solved the mystery
I'm non-Syed.
If you'd like to see a season two, send donations to Dave.
Here, I'll give you my routing number.
Just cash, please.
So what do we got coming up in the new year on cutprintfilm.com?
In the new year? Well, actually, next week.
Yes.
This week, if you will.
Well, this week counts as the new year.
Okay, fair enough. We have our monthly movie preview for January, where we tell you all the hot and not-so-hot movies coming out next month.
There's more not-so-hot this month.
Yeah, that's true. We also have our most anticipated films of 2015, which will be popping up on your RSS feed this week.
Maybe some of those movies we'll be talking about on this podcast a year from now.
That's right.
What a crazy thought.
Or maybe some won't come out at all and they'll have terrible production issues. Maybe a few deaths on set.
Yeah.
We don't know yet.
We can only hope.
What am I, a time traveler?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Take off those spats, Jeff. So what are some other sites you can check out besides, obviously, cutprintfilm.com?
Nah, just go to cutprintfilm.com.
Okay.
All right.
It's the end of the year.
Yeah, screw everyone else.
All
go to our website.
Suck.
Yeah.
Our website is fantastic. We have about 4 new articles every single day at the minimum.
And that's not counting reviews.
Right.
No.
You said day. Never mind. Yeah, is counting reviews.
Yeah, every day. We have tons and tons of articles going up. We have news. We have reviews. We have editorials. We have interviews. We have podcasts. If you didn't know that, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, you must
have fallen off a horse or been kicked in the head by a mule.
Chris is writing something about the American Dream and all these movies that dealt with that.
I'm writing about Ben and Jerry's Americone Dream.
Ooh, that's a good flavor.
Either way, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so
my taste buds are tingling.
Check us out. We're also on Twitter @CutPrintFilm. We're on Facebook. Go to iTunes. Give this very podcast a stellar review.
Yes.
Why don't you?
An 18-star review is all we ask of you, our precious listeners.
Every day do it, though.
Yes. Yeah. Flood their inboxes. What else can you do?
You can just sit back and relax.
Piss up a rope. I don't care.
That's an expression I've never heard before, but I'll be using it all day tomorrow.
Well, I hope I can teach you all something.
And toast to the new year.
Yes. Yeah, happy new year, everyone. We'll see you in 2015.
Cinnamon toast crunch to the new year.
Bye, 2014.
We hardly knew ye.
All right, I guess.